Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can, and that wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Ladies and gentlemen, tonight our 40-minute speaker is Mr. Otis J. from Laguna Beach. Let's give him a round of applause.
Yeah, good evening. My name's Otis, and I'm a grateful alcoholic. Hey, I must always say it's a pleasure and honor to speak in front of an AA meeting. I always think that, you know, when I do this, that you know, I'm going to be calm, I'll be relaxed, but it never happens, you know. I always go, okay, Otis, you got to get up there again. And I only have one story, like, how are you going to forget your story? You know? It's one of those things that I really do enjoy, and it does mean a lot to me. I really want to welcome the newcomers, because they're the most special people. You know, they're the lifeblood of the program, and they make all the difference in the world. I just love my newcomers, man, because they help me stay focused on what's important. See, they don't be caught up in that other stuff. They're just trying to, you know, stay alive and get another day, and as well. And I want to say congratulations to the birthday people, because it's great to have those celebrations and kind of be there. So, like I said, I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date's March 26, 1979. My home group is the Canyon Club in Laguna Beach, and my sponsor is Kip Barkers, so that takes care of that. Like I'm saying, whenever I go to speak, I can always remember the first time they asked me to speak at an AA meeting, and I was going, no way, no how. I'm not getting up in front of all those people and make a fool of myself. That is not going to happen. But, you know, the secretary knew my sponsor, and so he said, well, hey, I know your sponsor. And he said, you never turned down an AA request. And I go, God, they got me again. You know, what can I do? And I, you know, why I didn't want to be a speaker was I had heard those speakers at AA meetings, and they had fabulous stories, unbelievable. I couldn't believe this stuff. There were guys that said, hey man, I went out drinking, man, one night, you know, and I woke up in Paris, France. I go, Paris, France? He goes, yeah. I go, God. And the other guy goes, oh, this is nothing, man. I went out drinking. I woke up in Rio de Janeiro. I go, Rio de Janeiro. God. The other guy goes, forget both of them, Otis. He says, I went out drinking. I woke up in Las Vegas with five showgirls and a pocket full of money. And I was, damn, what are you guys drinking? I want some. I was waking up in alleyways, trash cans, by the toilet. I go, that Ripple and Thunderbird was not getting me there. I go, maybe I better stop the MD 2020. You know, because obviously I was not drinking the right kind of alcohol, because I was not going to any of those fun places. So, you know, I get a little bottle of wine, get drunk, pass out, pee in my pants, throw up, wake up. I go, Otis, that's not going to be a good story for the people. You know, you got to talk for 40 minutes, you know, 40 minutes on pee in the pants, not going to work. I go, oh my God, what am I going to do? So usually when I'm in trouble, I go talk to my mom. I go, okay, Mom, I got to go talk to these people. Can you give me anything that's sort of interesting about my, you know, growing up and being a kid or whatever I can share about my life? And so she said, sure. She told me all about being a kid and being born and what happened and all that. I went, oh, wow, that's great, Mom. That's pretty good. So here goes my story, and it's my story, and I'm sticking to it, too. It's my story. So it seems I was born in a small, sleepy town, Spartanburg, South Carolina. Now, this is in 1942, so in 1942, they had their kids at home. You didn't go to the hospital to have babies. They had the babies at home, and the midwife came, and so forth. So my mom's only about 7 months pregnant, and it's January, middle of the night, storm, raining, and she should have known that I was going to be a problem kid, because here I come, storming out of the gate 2 months early. And so my mom says, oh, call the midwife, I'm having contractions, the baby's coming. Everybody's running around, they get the boil in the water, get the stuff out, you know, and wham, here I come, you know, 2 months early. And then my mom looked at me and go, oh, this kid's not going to make it. I weigh 3.5 pounds. You could hold me in one hand. And they didn't have any incubators in those days, so they just kind of wrapped you up in a little blanket and kept you close to the fire to try to keep you warm and be okay. So the next thing she knew I was going to be a problem was I refused to eat. She tried to nurse me. I wouldn't eat. They went and got some special carnation milk, you know, and some other stuff and put together. I refused to eat. Now, when you weigh 3.5 pounds, you can ill afford not to eat. So I'm fading away fast. The sisters are praying, oh, God, bless the baby, bring the healing down, all that. Nothing's working. I am fading away fast. But as God always provides, I had this wise grandfather. So my grandfather came in and said, hey, Callie, let me have that boy. I'll fix him up. She says, well, you might as well, Dad, because, you know, he's just about gone. So Grandpa got me up, you know, wrapped me up in a little blanket, took me over to his place and took me back to the kitchen and put me on the little table. He says, don't worry, Otis, we're going to hook you up, dude. So he got a saucepan out, put a little milk in it, a little sugar, and then he went out back on the shed porch where he keeps on the bottom shelf his Primo. I'm talking Primo, third run, not first run, second, third run, good corn liquor, the good stuff. He got that stuff out. He hooked up a little bit into the milk, man. He got a little sopping rag and dipped it in there, and he squeezed a few drops. I start kicking. I try to chew a hold of it. I go, oh my God, what's that? So my claim to fame was I was taking liquor 2 months before I was supposed to be born. So I rest my case. Now I know some other lying alcoholic gonna say he was doing it 3 months before he was supposed to be born, but that's all right. That's my record. I'm holding to it. But you know, that was sort of synonymous in my family because we use alcohol for everything. You know, snake bites, rheumatism, bad tooth, cold, flu, whatever's wrong. You do something wrong, have a drink. I'll fix you up. You know, if it don't kill you, it'll cure you. And so it's sort of normal. But this was, like I said, 42, and then the war started. And then my dad had an opportunity to find work up in Pennsylvania and Philadelphia. So he packed us all up, and we moved up to Philadelphia. So I grew up, you know, inner city neighborhood in Philadelphia. Now, my problem was I was still this premature little runny kid. I was the run of the litter. My brother, who's like a year younger than me, was walking before me, talking before me. He's bigger than I was. I was just a little runt in the family. And so I was really safe at home as long as I stayed with Mom. But then, you know, it comes school age time, you got to go to school, you know. So in those days, you pack a little lunch and you have a little brown bag, you have a little sandwich, and you get a little penny for your cookie money or your milk money, you know, and you go off to school. So here I've got my little lunch money in my little bag, and I'm going off to school, you know, and it's always the bullies are on the corner waiting for you. They know the rookies when they see them coming, you know, they're all scared, you know. They go, hey, come over here, boy. And I go, oh, no, come over here. And they snatch me up, take my cookie money, my lunch, smack me around, and run me home. So my first thing was, the first feeling I can remember having was fear. I didn't fit in, I wasn't part of, and I didn't belong, you know? And I always had this anxiety about something was going to happen and life wasn't working. So I just struggled, you know, through school. And I remember they had those social affairs. They were terrifying. You know, you go to the little school gymnasium for the little dance. And now you guys, my homie would remember, but you go to the gym, all the girls line up on one side of the wall. I don't know why, they're all over there. And all the guys are on the other side of the wall. And they put the little 45 on, the little disc, you know, and they start the little song. And when they go to dance, you had to walk all the way across the floor with everybody looking at you and go ask the little girl for the dance, you know. You're terrified. So I go I'm walking across the floor and I know everyone's looking at me. I'm getting over there, you know, and I see the little lady, you know, what's your name right here? Huh? Jessica. Speak up, Jessica. Yeah. My name's... So I go, Jessica, could I have this dance? Jessica look at me and go, get out of here. Then you had to walk all the way back across the floor with everybody looking at you going, I'm not taking the walk. It's the walk of death. I go, no. So there I'm over on the wall. But some of my more enterprising brothers, you know, had scored a little pint of liquor, man, from the, you know, their pops, you know, liquor stash, you know. So they said, hey, Otis, let's go out back. And I would go anywhere with anybody that would let me be part of. So we go out back in the gym, and so they open a little bottle up, and I see the guys taking a little hit. You know, I go, well, when it comes to me, I'm going to let them know I can do this too. I'm going to take my big bag. So the bottle comes around, I go, wham! Now, I don't know about you, but your first taste of warm bourbon out of a bottle, man, when you were like 13 years old, could gag you to death. I went, ah! And they go, how was that? I went, oh, good! Because this stuff was horrible. So they pass the bottle around again. I go, okay, you can get one more down. So it comes, wham, I knock down another one. So we knock the bottle off. We throw it away. We go back inside to dance. Okay? And I resume my little position along the wall. So I'm standing there, and I said, wow, it's getting a little warm in here, man. Woo, I'm starting to sweat a little bit. Boy, I don't know what's happening, you know. And right about that time, my main man, James Brown, he came on, he started screaming, get up! Get up! You can dance! I had this sudden revelation. I went, Otis, you can dance! Oh my God, I came to life. I seen Eileen, I said, come here, girl. Grab Eileen. I threw on the floor, I started throwing the funky monkey. I go, walk with me, baby, walk with me. Ooh, I'm working with Eileen. I go, damn, this is good. And then she starts smiling at me. I went, damn. I go, girl, you sure are fine. Where you been? And I went, damn, I'm a lover too. Oh, my God. Things are looking good. You know, then, what's your name right here?
Jack.
Yeah, big, ugly guy like Jeff bumped into him. I went, pow, smack. And I went, damn, I'm a fighter too. Oh, my God. I didn't like alcohol. I fell in love with alcohol. I go, man, I'm a player. I'm a lover. I'm a fighter. I mean, all my fear went away. I go, this stuff is magic. I go, no wonder my daddy drink this stuff and go to jail. I'll go to jail for this, too. alcohol was my savior. And making sure it worked in the beginning. I would drink. I'd have a good time partying. I'd wake up fine the next day, no problems. I thought I had the key to success, you know. So the rest of my high school career was wonderful, man. I was a party guy. You wanted some alcohol, I could pimp somebody. I made sure I had it. It was always there. And I had an absolute ball. And it worked really great in the beginning. I didn't have any problems. I didn't notice that I could drink more than most other people, though. I'd be drinking, and they could be passing out. And I go, what's your problem, man? I go, I'm a number one. You know, so it went well. So I graduated high school, 1959. So in 1959, I graduated high school, and I have to look about what I'm going to do with my life. Now, I'm going to tell you a little secret. In 1959, if you're black and you can't sing, you can't dance, and you can't play sports, oh, you in serious trouble for it. There's not much available, you know. And then they want you to get a job. Oh, you know, nah, but we don't do good with that job. So I'm downtown one day, and I saw a sign. It said, travel, foreign land, adventure. I go, oh, that is me. Hook me up. Who's going to do that? Go, Uncle Sam wants you. I go, hook me up. Sign me up. I run down and find a recruiter. Go, I want foreign land, adventure, excitement, and travel. Yes. So I sign up. Let me tell you a little secret. You're not an alcoholic before you go into the military. If by chance you don't happen to be one, let me guarantee you, absolutely you will be one when you get out. Because that is a true training ground for every alcoholic, man. I mean, them old time men, they wake up in the morning, they do four fingers, man, just to start the day off, bam, you know, before breakfast and stuff. You know, I mean, and drinking was okay, it was accepted. If you didn't drink, they didn't trust you. You get drunk, you got in trouble, your first sergeant covered for you, everybody made it okay, and everybody drank, everybody got drunk, you know. So it was all good. I go, so the military is good. Drink, gambling, and chasing women. Oh, God, I go, this is paradise for an alcoholic, you know. And so it's all gone well. I mean, you know, I tend to overdo the little trouble every now and then, but they were kind of covered for me. But, you know, I did my military bit. And then in 63, 64, and then the Vietnam thing started kicking in. And they went, oh, you know, we need you to go over and kill some people. I go, oh, no, wait a minute. I ain't volunteered for all that. I want to travel land, foreign land, but this is a little bit too much. So I said, well, I think I'm going to end my military career. So, you know, I had my little 8 years in, so I kind of terminated my military career, and I came back home. So I go, okay, when I get back home, it's that same ugly word. They go, you got to get a job. So I surveyed the neighborhood, you know, and what jobs were available, and then I fell into the ideal, perfect job. Every alcoholic must have this job. You have to be the bartender in your local pub in your neighborhood where everybody knows you. Oh, my God. See, Philip going, hey, that man knows what I'm talking about. He knows. I saw a smile get that big on his face. Oh, God ain't going to heaven. You know, I work the afternoon, evening, night shift. I don't have to get up in the morning. You go in late. I go clean up my little bar, cut my little oranges, my little getting lemons all up, the glasses, get the bottles all ready, because I know, woo, 5 o'clock, they blow that whistle, they're coming. They come every day on time. I know what they want and what they need. Come right on in. Zoom, 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 zoom. You know, 2 for you, 1 for me. Yeah, 2 for you, 1 for me. Boom, boom, boom. You're dying going to paradise. And if you're a bartender, I swear, you could look like an orangutan and put an apron on him, and all the women will love you. They love bartenders. I don't know why. You could be dumb and ugly and can't talk good, you know. But if you're the bartender, oh, the girls love you, man. I'm going all. And this is the, I mean, this is party time. This is back in the go-go days. The girls with go-go's, you know, boots on. They had them in the cages and stuff, dancing in the bar. Go-go girls, taking partying. Oh, my homie's still laughing over there. You know what I'm talking about. You know, now there's nothing wrong. The go-go girls, they spend all your money up the war. You know, so what you have is, what I tend to have was a cash flow problem. The cash would flow out faster than it flow in. But hey, one more time, I'm struggling with this money. So we got to look for a solution to the cash flow problem. So we start thinking, what we need is a good Al-Anon lady. Now, I know there's some Al-Anon ladies in here. Where's my Al-Anon lady? I know there's over there. Al-Anon lady look at that and go, oh, he has potential. Oh, he has great, great, he's going to do well. So in comes a little Al-Anon lady. You know how charismatic we are, man. I go, hey, honey, how you doing? Good to meet you. What are you doing? You're a school teacher? Oh, yeah, good. Let me get you a little drink, talk to you, you know. I go, when I shut down, me and you, we're going to go out. So, hey, I wine and dine, charm the little school teacher. She signs the paperwork, man. We're in business. I go, good deal, man. You know, I said, now, honey, you let me handle the finances because I'm a financial genius. I can make us rich with no problem. So she brings a little check in, takes care of the major bills, so the cash flow problem gets taken care of for a while. Oh, looking good, I'm out partying, no cash flow problems, life is good. But only thing wrong with that then, after a year or so, that comes the dreaded thing. It's called the Al-Anon yuck. Yuck, 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 yuck. Where you going? Yuck, yuck, yuck. Where you been? Yuck, yuck, yuck. When you coming back? Yuck, yuck, yuck. Where you spend the money? Yuck, yuck, yuck. Oh, make a man want a drink, boy, I tell you. Damn Al-Anon yak will make a man drink, man. Turn you into a damn alcoholic, man. I tell you, I blame her for becoming an alcoholic, man. That Al-Anon yak was killing me. So I go, okay, honey, what we need to do, okay, I tell you what, a family, that's what we need, a family. Let's start a family, because I know that'll keep it busy, you know. So when we go to bed, boom, family starts, bam, here comes the little baby girl. I got my little Alex. She's busy now with the baby. Everything's fine. She's busy diapers, feed the baby. Yeah, look at that, honey. Good. I'm back out partying. Everything is good. You know, but, you know, the baby only lasts so long. You know, then they start going, yeah, I go, okay, honey, I'll tell you what. I'll stay home and take care of the baby. You go out, call your girlfriends up. Get some money. Go out. Have a great time. Enjoy yourself. Stay late you want to. I'll stay home with the baby. You really will? I go, sure. Really? I go, sure. No problem. So she calls her girlfriends up. She gets all dressed up, you know. Boom. Now, just take care. I can handle this. I can take care of kids. No problem. Boom. She's out the door. I turn to my little daughter, Onyx. I go, she's only like one and a half. I go, hey, Onyx, you want to go party with daddy? I go, I know you did. So I get in the little bassinet thing you carry, man, strap red. I get out the little baby bag. I like the baby bags, you know, a bottle of milk, a couple of diapers, fifth of Jack, couple of booze, a little go fast, good, yeah, because they ain't going to search the baby bag. Mom, I hook up the baby bag and get it up. Now, I'll tell you, if you walk into a bar with a little puppy or dog, the girls go crazy. But when you bring a baby in, oh, God, they, oh, look at that baby, oh, God. And so they all run around, so they're taking care of the baby. I'm drinking, partying. Now, but I'm going to beat the wife home. I know. If I get home, she won't even know I left. That's my plan. But unfortunately, well, you know, when you're drinking, time has a way of getting away from you a little bit. You know, now in Philly, when they blink the lights, oh, you know you're in trouble. They're blinking the lights. It's past the midnight hour. I know I'm in serious trouble. Now, the one thing about alcoholics, if we're already in trouble, we figure, what the heck, let's make a good run of it. Why the hell no? Because I know some after hours speakeasy joints I can go to. I'm not going home. So I drag the baby off to the speakeasy. I'm out 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the morning drinking, partying, you know, put the baby in the thing, put a little scotch in her milk, gotta put her to sleep. That's all good. My wife has called every hospital, all my friends, the police station. She is going insane. I get home, she is just through with me. It's over, you're through. And I go, you know what? I'm tired of online yakking in. I'm out of here. I'm gone. I'm packing it up. So I pack it up. I go, one of my first 5 divorces, 5 wives later. But whatever, I marry them and leave them every other week. So I'm crazy because I'm drunk and I'm crazy. Who wants to stay with me anyhow? But I know what I'm doing. The next time I'm not marrying no Allen Allen, I'm going to find me a lady that likes to drink. And what's her name right here? Am I keep lying? What's her name?
Cindy.
Cindy. Now, I look at Cindy because now Cindy looks like a party girl. I like Cindy. Yeah. So I talked to Cindy. We did the little party together. I go, look at Cindy. Let's set up housekeeping. It's all good. Cindy goes, yeah. Now, Cindy's sweet, man, because she drinks, she parties, everything's good, no yak, yak, yak. It's all good. So I go, okay, Cindy, all the liquor's here. I got my little stash, got my little bud and stuff down. It's cool. You know where this stuff is now. I'm going to go out and make a hustle now. You be good. Stay at the house. I'll be back. Everything's good. She said, oh, everything's fine, Otis. You know, yeah, go on, honey. Make your run, do the little hustle. So I go out, make my little run, my hustle. I come back. Cindy is bomb. Done crack all my liquor. That's all and smoked up all the dough. I'm going, I'm going to kill you, Cindy. This is worse than the online yak. Okay, about the time things are getting bad, it's geographic time. Things in Philly are bad. People are asking me, I owe people money. Cindy done drank all my stuff up. I got no cash. So, but I got some friends out here in the coast, man, out here in Cali, man, down in Compton. I got some of my, you know, my homeboys that I was in the military with. So I call them, I say, hey, what's happening out in Cali? They go, oh, it's popping out here. It's come on out, man. So I leave Philly, raining, cold, ugly, pop a jet, boom, hit LAX. Things are good. My partner picks me up, boom, we roll into Compton. Hey, you know, I get out, you know. So I'm going to go survey the neighborhood. So I look, they got grass growing in the street. They got real grass. I mean, Philly, it's all asphalt and cement. There ain't no grass. No tea. How come they got grass in California, man? This is in January. And so I'm walking down the street, and I look up, and I saw this, you know, in the driveway, a big boat, a big-ass boat in the driveway. I go, damn, I know this is a black neighborhood. The brothers got boats in California. Hey, a real boat. So I go back, I go, homie, I mean, who's the boat? He go, oh, that's Leroy's boat. I go, Leroy? I go, I got to find out who Leroy is. I figure he must be a drug smuggler from Mexico or something. So I go, meet Leroy, you know. I go, hey, Leroy, how you doing? Yeah, I go, that's your boat? Yeah. Now, I figure, well, who's Leroy? Leroy is this big gum brother from Alabama. Can't have talk to him. Oh, yeah, that's my boat out there. I go, well, what do you do with the boat? Oh, I go fishing with the boat. I go fishing. Who the hell wants some fish? I go, if the dumb brother from Alabama got a boat, I'll have a yacht in no time. I'm moving to Cali. I call my girl up. I go, hey, no, I'm not even coming back. I'm staying in Cali. She said, well, come back, get the furniture, the car, the stuff. I go, okay, honey, coming home, but pack it up. We're going to the coast. So, boom, pack up, back out here on the coast. Things are going good. So I tell my baby, honey, the first thing we got to do, the very first thing, is get you a job. Yeah. So we found my little honey a job. So she couldn't find it in Compton, but she found a job at UCI Irvine. which was wonderful. She would leave in the morning and drive all the way down to Irvine's room, and she'd work at the university. I'm going, sweet. I got the whole day. I'm popping and hopping, and it's all good. I know she's coming home around 5:36. I beat it back to the house. Hi, hon. Good. Little dinner. I'm going to help with dinner. Sure, baby. You know, a little dinner. And then you got to go to bed because you got to go early tomorrow to go to work. You know, I put her bed, rule down. Pow, back in the street. I go, this is sweet. After about 5 or 6 months more, she started complaining. She said, Otis, I hate that drive. I don't like it. I don't want to drive there no more. I'm going to quit my job. I go, oh, wait a minute. Let's not get carried away. I go, we can move. We'll move to Orange County, Irvine. So I told my homies, man, hey, I'm off to Irvine, Newport Beach. They go, ooh. They go, okay, don't think that's a good move. I go, why not, man? I'm the brother. I'm going anywhere. They go, ooh. Them Republicans down there, man. Newport Beach. They be waiting on you. I ain't going to mess with me, man. So I pack up my stuff, and here I come, man. So I get a little nice apartment, you know, down in Irvine, University stuff, and Newport Beach, and I got her working. I set up shop. I'm out drinking, popping, partying. Things are good for a little while. Then what I call the beginning of the end. I'm out doing my thing, and on come them little red lights, and little red blinkety. I'm smiling, you know, little blinkety, blinkety, blinkety red lights, man. I'm like, dang, must be a robbery in the neighborhood or something. Can't be me. You know, they got them laughing. Pull over the car, pull over. I'm like, oh, God. So they pull me over, and here they come. And I hate these guys now. The little Newport Beach police, they always think they're so cool. Little small, ugly dudes with little sunglasses on, you know. I go, what do you want? So the guy says, hey, can I see your driver's license, registration? You know, I go, look, guy, I got things to do, bro. You slow me down here, man. You know, what's the problem? He says, well, you know why I pulled you over? He says, no idea. He said, you were weaving a little bit, so I was checking. He says, well, have you been drinking? And I looked at him, well, have I been drinking? He says, yes, have you been drinking tonight? I thought it was Friday night, isn't it? I said, everybody drinks on Friday night. Oh, well, how much have you been drinking? I go, I'm not counting them, I'm drinking them. He says, well, I'm going to have to ask you to step out of the vehicle, you know, and do a sobriety field test for me, and you know, and then I let you go. I go, look, you're really slow. I'm going to roll down, man. Don't make me miss my lady. But, okay, I'll get out of the car. But we're going to make this quick, right? He says, no problem. So I get out of the car. He says, all you have to do is walk down that line, turn around and walk back down the line, you know, down here and do that with no problem. And I'll let you go. I go, sure. Walk down the line, turn around, walk back down the line. That's all. He says, yeah. I go, that ain't no problem. Walk down the line, turn around and walk back. He says, yeah. I looked and I went, what line? He said, I was afraid you were going to say that. He says, well, according to California Code 23105A, now, I'm going to lock you up. I looked at him like, you are going to lock me up? You got to be kidding. You're a little ugly dude. I thought, you ain't locking nobody me up tonight. And he started smiling. I don't know what the heck he's smiling about. Then he turned around and went, hey, Joe. I went, who the heck is Joe? I turned around, I saw a 9-foot gorilla get out of the car. So that big, I'm like, oh, dang, I'm going to jail today. I ain't arguing with Joe. Joe looked too ugly. I go, okay, so I know, duck their head behind the back in the car. So they lock me up. I'm in OCJ. I'm calling for F.B. Bailey, Johnny Cochran, the Montauk boy. Get me the heck out of here, you know. And they said, we're going to come in here and put you to sleep if you don't shut up, man. So, you know, they kicked me out on OR, whatever, but, you know, we keep on doing the same thing we do, and they're looking for me again. Look up here, they go to like, blinkly, blinkly, blink. I went, oh, God, not again. They know me by first name. Hey, Otis, hey, how do I? Do we need to get Joe? I go, no, don't even get Joe out. So, after about my third arrest, I'm mad. I go, I know why they're locking me up. The reason they locked me up because every police officer on the Newport Beach Police Department is a racist. I know this. They had this test you take, and as you're going down the blocks, and the third question is, are you a racist? If you check the block, yes, you are hired immediately. I noticed they're hired. So my buddy said, oh, this maybe it's your profile, home. You know, maybe, you know, they're checking you out. I go, well, no, my profile's fine. Well, check out my profile. So this is like still, you know, the 70s. And any brother that's worthwhile being a brother had afros. Afros were in. I had the baddest afro you ever saw. My afro was this big. Boom! Now, to get my afro right, I had to use this chemical to relax my hair. So between the chemical I had relaxed my hair, the California sunshine, and the chlorine bleach in the pool, my afro was bright orange. So I had this bad orange fro. I had my little earrings, you know, dangling. I had my golden lavender dashikis with my marijuana leaves in them and my bell-bottom pants, and I'm barefoot. And shit. You know, I go, isn't this Newport Beach attire? And they're going, oh, that's not quite Newport Beach attire. He says, okay, if it's not your attire, it's your car. Because my car, now my car is sacred. You know, because it gets you to the booze, the drugs, you got to have your car. I had the best car in the world. It's a, and it had to be economical. I had a Volkswagen Beetle. They even came back out with them. This is 1970s, you know, Volkswagen Beetle. And being a carpenter brother, I had a canary yellow Volkswagen Beetle. It was bad. So I'm out partying with my little Beetle. I'm zipping and tipping and woo-woo. Only thing wrong is that in the middle of the night, I'd be turning corners. I swear to God, I would get attacked by what I call the movable poles. I'm coming down the street, the poles jump off the sidewalk into my car. Wham! I turn the corner, wham! Then I speed up and turn around the other corner, a whole line of parked cars move right out in front of me. Boom, 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 boom! I would get up the next day, survey the damage of the movable poles. My car's in bad shape. And I'm in a Newport Beach area, it's starting to rust up. It gets a little rusty from the salt air and stuff. So I go, Jose, my stuff is looking bad, home. He says, oh, you need some Bondo, man. I go, Bondo, yeah. Go to Cheap Auto Supply, get some Bondo, hook you up, you'll be in business. Just go to Cheap Auto Supply, and say, man, I need a whole bucket of that Bondo from my vehicle. He says, well, we have the gray primer, and we have the red primer. I go, shuck, you know me. Give me the red, bro. I'm into the colorful. So I got my red Bondo, I'm back banging out the nets. So I got red Bondo, got Rondo Bondo here, Bondo on the spender, a little on the top, middle on the side. Pretty soon I have the only canary yellow and red polka dot Volkswagen in the immediate area. And now I'm ducking the police, so I'm going through the little driveways, and I'm speeding along, I look up, this is a big ass hill in front of me. You guys call them speed bumps, big hill what it is. Wham! I go over the speed bump hill, tear off my tailpipe muffler's gone. Ding-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling, gone. So I roar down Newport Boulevard. You can hear me before you see me. A pow-pow, pow-pow, a cloud of smoke, a canary yellow, red Volkswagen, a brother in a hard afro, drunk out of my mind, cocaine running up my nose, and they're locking me up because I'm blind. I know this. They go, Otis, they don't even notice if you're black. With all the attention you have. I don't know why we like so much attention, but whatever. The judge looked at me and said, Mr. Johnson, you know, it's not much hope for you. Everything I see here is alcohol, drug-related, you know, possession, you know, whatever. He says, I know what I'm going to do. I am going to give you a break. I'm going to send you to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm like, oh, wait a minute. I have heard about Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, in Africa, they have this special sacred place where all the elephants go to die. They call it the elephant graveyard, where they often die. Well, AA, I knew, it is where all the hunky winos go to die. I heard it, and I seen the picture with the shaky guy by the bed. I go, oh, no, no, I'm not going to the hunky wino graveyard. Not a good-looking brother like me. So the guy says, well, I'll give you 60 in OCJ to think it over. I go, whoa, man. I start thinking about OCJ, and I start thinking about Bubba. Now, Bubba, boy, he's looking for a girlfriend. I go, maybe I can't do that. Maybe AA's not so bad after all. So I got my little car, and off I come to AA. Oh, my first AA meeting, Santa Ana, Main Street, a lotto club. It ain't even there no more. They tore it down for an eyesore. I mean, it was this dilapidated building, smoke coming out, like bats coming out. And I'm like, I drove by, and went, ooh, God. I go, you can do this, sir. You can do this. So I go into the Alano Club. First thing I see is them two honky winos at the table with coffee. I went, oh, this is bad. I go, well, where's the AA meeting? I go, it's inside. So I came on inside down, and then you guys started to come in. I go, oh, this is not too bad. This is pretty good. So I'm listening to what they're talking about, you know. So I heard her talking about the steps. I thought, oh, that must be how you get out of here. I'm going to find out what the steps are. So I'm going to get out of here. You know, and then they start, you know, sharing it. And they start talking about, you know, God this and higher power and God. I go, oh, God, this is a cult, man. I ain't maybe John Jones. I ain't drinking none of that damn coffee, man. You know, they're talking about that. I go, oh, I'm just going to watch out. So they all sat down. They read the little stuff. You know, and then they says, okay, now the meeting's open. And so I'm sitting there. And so this lovely lady, I got Eileen, sweet little thing. She raised her hand and go, my name is Eileen and I'm an alcoholic. I went, shh, Eileen, don't say nothing, Eileen. They won't know. Don't tell nobody. You know, and then Eileen went on and on about, oh, yeah, I get up in the morning after my husband left. I go drinking and get drunk. I get the clothes out to wash, but I leave them on the floor and the dog poop all on them. I pass out. I'm upstairs with the neighbor having an affair with the boyfriend. I'm going, Eileen, shut up. They're going to throw you out of here, girl. Chill. You'll never hold your head against. Hold it. She went on and on. I'm over there dying, going, God, I can't believe it. And finally she stopped. And guess what the freaks did? They went. I go, what the heck they clapping for? Oh, my God. Okay. So she stopped. Then I looked over. I see my brother Mike over there. Now I go, the guys are here, not as dumb as women. I know they're not that dumb. And Mike ain't doing no dumb stuff like this. He raised his hand. I go, there go Mike with his hand up. He said, yeah, my name is Mike. I'm an alcoholic. I went, no. If I thought Eileen was bad, she was an angel compared to this dude. Oh, he's talking about stealing all the kids' money, robbing grandmother's jewelry, solar false teeth, going to bed with his brother's wife, robbing the liquor store. I go, you're going to jail, Mike. You're going to jail. I go, shut up. I go, they're waiting for you outside. Mike went on and on and on. Mike finished. They waking out again. I go, dude, these people are crazy, man. I couldn't believe it. I went home and I says, well, now, how was your meeting? I go, honey, you know what? If you think they got stuff on General Hospital, As the World Turns, Days of Our Lives, they ain't got nothing on the AA people, man. They got to make a sitcom out of what them people saying down there. But, you know, I said, but they were all laughing about it. And that's what I couldn't understand, you know. And I came back because I heard you guys laughing. And I had not laughed in a long time. There was no joy in my life at all. And you guys were having so much fun. I go, how can they have this much fun? You know, they're laughing and talking and they weren't drinking. I go, this is amazing. You know, and somehow I got attracted into to be able to laugh and have fun and just be okay for a while. That was my first attraction. And then you guys told me to come in and, you know, you let me be part of and do things. You know, I love them. Commitment to me, empty the ashtrays, make the coffee and be part of. I just couldn't believe the openness, man, and they cared about me. They told me to get a sponsor. You know, I saw this old grizzly old white dude with old back of stains all in his lips. They go, yeah, Tom, he'd be a good sponsor for you, you know. Now, I go get Tom for a sponsor. So he says, come on with me, boy. I don't ain't no boy. He says, shut up, boy. Come on. It was crazy. Tom took me out back in the parking lot where he had his car, and he opened the trunk up. He had a lockbox, and he opened up the lockbox. And I saw him take out a .45. He went, click, click. I went, damn. He said, none of my sponsees go back out and drink. Oh, no! I thought, these people are crazy, man. They scared the hell out of me. I'm going, damn. The old timers in the back in the day, they didn't play. But they tell you, shut up, sit down, put the cotton in your mouth, all that dumb stuff. We'll shoot you. I go, they do. Yeah. And they didn't have no problem getting volunteers, man. They tell you, yeah, you do the coffee, you go over and do that, man. You can go, well, let's vote on it. Do you want to volunteer? No, they just tell you what to do. You don't like it, get the hell out. They go, you need us more than we need you. I went, damn. Man, they were tough. But, hey, they brought me in. And they taught me how to start to live again. It's just an amazing. I mean, my life today is so amazing and so rich. It's just unbelievable. I mean, they taught me about humility. I didn't know anything about being humble. You know, and it takes a lot of humility to admit that you're powerless over alcohol and your life's unmanageable and that you're crazy and you want to get restored and you're going to turn your life over to somebody. You got to be a lot of humble. Then you want to write all the stuff down you did. Oh, God. Then you got to tell somebody. Oh, God. You know, then you got to look at your character defects. Oh, God. They just bring you really down to nothing. Then they tell you that you got to volunteer and do stuff. You got to be, you know, generous and caring and kind. Oh, God. Then you got to be grateful and thank everybody every day. Then they hit me with the big one. acceptance. You got to accept everything the way it is. You don't get to change nothing. Dang. But I did that stuff and my whole life changed. You know, it'll be 35 years in March. I'm doing the same thing I did when I first came in. Do my little commitment. I go to my little meeting. I just show up. I laugh and I joke. I have a lot of fun. Life works. The newcomers, man, quick Nick, I saw him. What did I see that newcomer in here? I saw him somebody. I said, man, this guy, if he gets this program this young, man, his life's going to be unbelievable. If you're lucky enough to be in here today, and you get a sponsor, you get to stay sober, you're going to have the life beyond your wildest imagination. You cannot imagine how good it's going to get. It's unbelievable. Because you'll find that thing inside, you know, that spiritual part of yourself. And, you know, the obsession of drinking will just go away. It just won't be there anymore. And you get to really, for the first time in your life, be part of something and belong and feel loved and cared for, man. It just works amazingly. You know, today, I can't wait to get to a meeting. I'm still excited about going to a meeting 35 years later. I go, yeah, oh, I'll be there. I love it. We have fun. We act crazy. You know, we don't take things serious. We just don't drink and we don't use. And life works out. But what I do know, each and every person in this room has a commitment to make. Because, see, someone's got to be there for the next alcoholic. And one day, you're going to reach out and help someone. They're going to come back to you and say, hey, you know what? You helped save my life. My man, he knows over there. My brother over there, he knows about it. He's had people come up to him and say, hey, you know, if it weren't for you, I wouldn't be alive today. I owe you. And then, like Fred, your life has changed forever. You can do stuff for 17 years because it makes all the difference in the world. Because I never thought that I, just the alcoholic crazy me, could be significant enough to change someone's life and have them be sober. But when you do that, you'll never be the same again. Never. I mean, your purpose is here. You have a purpose to stay sober, which is huge. It takes a lot of work. But you get to help another alcoholic. You get to make a difference in someone's life. You young guys here got to have to carry on because, you know, me and Fred, we down there out of this thing, man. Ain't got much more time left for us. But, you know, someone's got to be on, carry this thing on. And it is absolutely amazing when you get, you know, involved in the program, you become part of, and you do something for someone else, man, your life will change. You know, I learned how to love myself, and I learned how to love you. And when you learn how to love yourself and someone else, your life takes on a whole new way of living. I got a wife today, and she don't have to work. You know, she doesn't have to. I suggest it wouldn't hurt, but she don't have to work. I make enough money to take care of her, but I ain't looking for her work. And I have my daughter. I have, like, kids that love me. They think I'm a good dad. I'm a nice guy. People respect me. It's unbelievable. I haven't been in jail 35 years. I'm not on probation no more. They ain't looking for me. So I'm going to tell you, man, if you're here, you are exceptionally lucky individual. You are so lucky that, you know, you can't imagine how lucky you are. If you find a sponsor in here and you keep coming back and you put the chairs up and clean up afterwards, man, and do this deal, because the commitment people make it, man, those are people who stay sober. You look around, see who has commitments, they're the ones staying sober. People without commitments, you know, it's kind of here and there. But what I really know that you will be part of the largest growing spiritual organization in the world. Nobody does what we do. Nobody does what we do. We perform miracles. We take the lost, the crazy, the blind, the lame, the slow, and we bring them right back to life, man. We do the impossible. We do what nobody else can do. No one can do. No one has that gift but us. You know, we can talk to another alcoholic and turn their whole life around. It's absolutely amazing. So I know I'm the luckiest guy in the world. I'm the richest guy in the world. You know, I have more than I could ever dreamed of having. So my life is good. You guys are like my family, my people. I'm good to go. It all kind of works. So before I go, I need everybody to do one thing for me. Could everybody just stand up for 1 minute? Could y'all stand up for a minute? Right. And could you turn to that person next to you, give them a big hug and say, I love you. You know, tell me, keep coming back. Get a hug. Yeah, go hug that guy. All right. All right, I love you too, guys.